Griffiths again. He scored again! Sensational! Lightning strikes twice!
Good play by Gemland again. 3-1! James McFadden scores for Scotland! France are stunned and Scotland lead in Paris!
And welcome to the Pure Football Podcast. I'm your co-host Owen Brown, and with me is Gavin Miller. This, of course, today is a Scotland national team podcast. Look, I've not sat through a couple of Israel's games from last year, a couple of Czech Republics from last year, Czech Republic versus Slovakia from Friday, Scotland v Israel from Friday, Iceland v England from the weekend, in the hope that, you know, we might get a wee kind of bit of joy there. Czech Republic versus Scotland from Monday night, and Scotland under 21 versus Lithuania under 21. From Tuesday, all for nothing. just thinking, Gavin, I remember a time, probably just even last Thursday, it seemed so far away, when I was quite positive about international football, even quite like the Nations League. Things have certainly changed, but yeah, let's get into it anyway. Firstly, how are you, Gavin? You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty well. It's going to be a relatively quick fire kind of episode, so we're going to have a quick chat about Steve Clarke's Kilmarnock. Steve Clarke, Scotland. We're going to rate the players from the game against the Czech Republic, and then we're going to talk about the under 21 game and maybe just have some kind of general chats along the way, some opinions and ideas about bits and pieces of that. So firstly, I said, Gavin, that I wanted to know what five words you would use to describe Kilmarnock in the 2018-19 season under Clarke, and what five words you'd use to describe Scotland under Clarke in the year 2020, I guess. Firstly, I wanted to just give a shout out to Bruce Burns on Twitter, who replied to the Pure Football account with five words for Steve Clarke at Killie, really hard to break down, and five words for Steve Clarke at Scotland, drive you to a breakdown, which is pretty funny. But let's hear you, Gavin. First of all, for Kilmarnock, five words.
So my five words were individual words, not as clever as that, but it was resolute, stout, defensive, tactical, and disciplined. That was my sort of words that I felt were a good way to encapsulate Steve Clarke's Kilmarnock.
I'll add my five in. So I had disciplined, settled. That's because I felt they had quite a lot of players that played the majority of the minutes. So I think like 15 players played 900 minutes or more before the split. Two centre-backs, two full-backs, two centre-midfielders and two wingers each got more than 2,000 minutes before the split. So settled. Plan, drilled. And synergistic, by which I kind of mean that the whole was greater than the individual parts, right? They kind of came together to make something a bit more than what individually you might expect. So anything else that you want to kind of say specifically about him at Kilmarnock and the kind of team there before we give our five words about him managing Scotland?
I guess that my only thing was I think I wrote an article a while back, which I think probably sums up a lot of my feelings round about Steve Clarke and a lot of what I thought could happen, and I think we're maybe seeing a little bit of that come to fruition. And yeah, I just think that there's a big difference between managing a settled group as you called them at Kilmarnock versus having to react to calling up a team and drafting in players, you know, and also having to manage players from not just from an individual level, but manage them from a club perspective as well. So, you know, we clearly seen players drop out, and I'm assuming that's in some sort of agreement with their parent clubs about the minutes they would play. So that's just a different sort of relationship that you have to manage as well, right? So it's just something that I think maybe is under the radar in terms of managing at international level and the pressures that that brings as well.
Yeah, it's tough. But I mean, I think that's part of the gig, right? It's going to be one of the skills or the attributes that you would want somebody in that role. You need somebody that isn't just a good football manager, but part of the kind of managing relationships and, you know, being able to build that kind of settled squad. I don't know. I just think that's a kind of key part. You know, I would think that you'd want some tactical skills in terms of that and not just on the park. But yeah, anyway, In terms of Kilmarnock under Clark, I guess we looked at some stats kind of earlier on today. I guess what I'd want to do just now is just run through a few of those. Just because it's interesting to look at, you know, what Kilmarnock were like statistically and then maybe think, well, could that have translated to Scotland? Would it actually been effective? Has it, you know, and so on. So in terms of Kilmarnock in the 2018-19 league season, they conceded two shots fewer than the league average per game. They conceded the second fewest clear shots per match, and they conceded the fewest counter-attacking shots per match. And they conceded the lowest average expected goals per shot that they conceded. So, you know, that kind of clearly tells a story about the their ability to limit their opponents. In terms of doing that, well, they allowed the opposition the second highest pass completion percentage in the league on average. They allowed the fourth most passes before they made a defensive action in the league. And their average defensive action was the fifth deepest in the league. So again, that tells you a little bit about the story, right? They're not conceding many shots. The shots that they're conceding are not very good quality chances. And to do it, they're kind of sitting off the opposition generally and kind of conceding ground. However, once the opponent got to a certain point, they are then being a little bit, you know, active because they made the third most aggressive actions per game and they allowed the third fewest passes inside their own penalty box. So that's the kind of defensive side of Steve Clark's team statistically at Kilmarnock. And it clearly worked out, right? So they conceded 0.82 goals per game and the XG was almost exactly the same, right? 0.80 XG conceded per game. So the game plan and defence basically worked and it was a big factor in terms of their performance that season. Up the park, though, their goal difference was a wee bit better than their expected goal difference. So they kind of, you know, overperformed in that regard, and that was mainly driven on attack. So they managed to get 1.32 goals per game, but they only actually made 1.06 XG per game. So a little bit kind of lucky. And I guess, funnily enough for me, given how Scotland have managed to score recently, they got about double the league average of penalty goals per game. And they were actually below league average in terms of open play XG created per game. So that's just some stats at kind of both ends of the pitch. And I think it kind of shows you, you know, in fairly kind of basic statistical terms, what Kilmarnock were good at under Clark and, you know, what perhaps helped them get to where they got. I guess we can maybe move on now and hear what your kind of five words you would use to describe Scotland under Steve Clark are. And then we can maybe talk about whether there's any crossover from what we saw with him as the Kilmarnock manager to Scotland and what we would kind of want to happen there. So hit me with five words.
Yeah, my five words is, it's a pure mess, mate.
Okay.
I think there's, I guess, a bit of context around about that is that, yes, whilst we're unbeaten in five games and, you know, things would feel like, you know, this should feel like momentum, whereas right now it doesn't feel like momentum after scraping a victory against, you know, Czech Republic C team. And I think when you look at the games that against the teams we've played, these are games that realistically, you know, San Marino, etc., that we should be winning anyway. The draw with Israel at home is disappointing, so yeah, there's a lot of things that need to be questioned for me, but yeah, I'm sure we'll get onto that as we go through the players. But yeah, I think there's just a lot of question marks for me just now. And again, I don't want to blow my own trumpet, but I think, again, these are like the things that I was worried about are starting to transpire for me under Steve Clark. But we'll definitely get to that.
Okay. My five words were incoherent, uncertain, underperforming, confusing. And that's just four words. That's how confusing it is, really. but yeah, I mean, it's like you point to, Gavin. Yeah, we may have this spell of being unbeaten and we may be top of the Nations League group. But I think, you know, just saying, well, we've got the wins and that's all that matters type thing, you know, the results are what matters. that's not the case at all for me. I mean, it's very obviously not the case, because it then means that it's not a predictor at all of kind of future success, because the performances are just not there, the underlying numbers are not there. But it's also about, you know, what's the point of the national team? Is the point just to kind of win the, you know, we're not going to, I don't know, maybe some people think the goal is just to qualify for once for an international tournament, mm-hmm. and any way to get there will do. But for me, I think, you know, you want your international team to maybe make you feel things, positive things. And I just feel fed up, you know, watching it. I wasn't one of the people who was particularly apathetic before. You know, I always felt kind of, you know, I would be behind the team and, you know, there was good players and stuff. And, you know, that they deserved our support. But I just feel very, you know, kind of run down by it at the moment, just kind of depressed by it. And I think for me, particularly in the kind of build up to these games as well, with, you know, you mentioned things about the kind of dropouts and the kind of withdrawals and things. And I was very disappointed, not with the fact that players had dropped out, not with the fact that, for instance, somebody like McBurney had dropped out, because these things happen, right? It's international football, you know, people get injured, people have other priorities and stuff. But for me, it's more the communication, the way the fans seem to be treated in some way. And to me, I just have a little bit of a fear that some of that, and again, don't want to act as some kind of armchair analyst, but I just have this view that maybe Clark has a little bit of a this is how it is kind of attitude. And, you know, that, you know, players should be honoured to play for the national team, and that explanations aren't really required. You know, it's just his job to get the team on the park and win matches and so on. So the public don't really need to be informed of what's happening. But this is 2020. You know, there's so much information around. People have different expectations about being kept in loop. And I think the fans, given, you know, how things have been, deserve a little bit more of a connection and kind of proactive communication about things. And also, if there's not that with the kind of fans, it makes me worry a little bit about how people are being managed. And again, you know, people might say, well, people should be honoured to play for the Scotland team, and, you know, you shouldn't have to try and, you know, kind of mollycoddle people or whatever. But look at the reality of things. You know, it's a tough gig being an international manager. But as I said, I think one of the aspects that's important is getting a settled squad together, making a kind of unified unit, and, you know, getting that pool of players. We have, you know, I don't know, not to labour that point too much, but I just kind of worry about, you know, kind of what's, if it's confusing for us, if things are uncertain for us as fans, how is it for the players? What's the relationship behind the scenes like there? You know, what's really going on? I don't know, just a bit worried. Anyway, let's move on and talk about the team performance against the Czech Republic. So, of course, this was against a bunch of debutants, apart from two players. So, you know, a real kind of second string at most. One of the players with a cap was a 36-year-old who had, of course, played and scored against us back when Craig Levine played his 4-6-0 formation. So, yes, they're obviously all capable players. They play in a fine division, but they were flung together at the last minute. You know, obviously had very little training time together, don't have that kind of opportunity to have any cohesion. And yeah, we scraped a victory, really quite undeservedly, I would say. But let's run through them individually. So David Marshall, give me a score out of 10 and a quick recap of how he did.
I gave Marshall a 6 for this game. I felt that he did make some, you know, pretty good saves throughout the game, but most of them I felt were pretty standard and saves that really he should be making. I felt that we still have issues with his distribution and his ability to, you know, to help us play out properly. I just feel that there was, I've just never been particularly in love with him as a, you know, as Scotland's number one. I think the way that John McLaughlin's playing for Rangers, he was probably more deserving. I think he's, you know, shown a lot of capability with the ball at his feet, and he was being, you know, really reliable. And I think that he's a couple of years younger than Marshall. I think, yeah, just not a goalkeeper I've ever really been enamoured with. So I'm giving him a 6. I think the saves were saves that he should have made. And there was, I think it was the one in the first half was definitely for the cameras when, you know, he wasn't to know how close it was, but I think the way that he sort of parried it away was definitely a bit of sort of slow motion theatrics.
You mean the one towards the top far corner?
Yeah.
That was actually going wide?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how I felt at the time. I'm on the same page with you about Marshall in this match, and generally he did well, Luke, and I score him a 7 out of 10 for that. He faced, I think, 19 shots, but only 4 of them were on target. I think people are going a little bit overboard. I think there was a tendency after this match, understandably, for lots of fans on social media to be clinging on to the positives. So, you know, Marshall got a hell of a lot of praise. Deserved. He did his job. But nothing spectacular. And as you say, the distribution again is an issue. And I know that was not helped by the defence and the midfield and so on. But again, you know, punting it aimlessly and stuff. Let's move on, though. Let's go to right wing-back Liam Palmer. You got a score and a comment for us?
Yeah, so I gave Palmer a 6 as well. I felt that a lot of people will maybe focus on his assist, which was a nice ball in for Lyndon Dykes, but I think at times, positionally, it was a little bit all over the place, and I guess a good example of that was the opening goal. But it wasn't just how far back it was. I think if you watch the goal back, he doesn't even look like he's trying to sort of burst a lung to get, you know, back in to support McTominay or whatever. It's quite a, you know, it just felt a bit like it's not, like he'd passed it on. It wasn't his deal to get back and cover that space. Whereas I felt like he had an opportunity to come down and at least, you know, potentially put the Czech player off. Whereas that sort of stuck out in my mind. I think he'll get a few sort of credits for some of his, you know, his attacking play. But I think we do have to really remember this was a Czech Republic C team. It wasn't even a B team. You know, people are making it out like it's a B team. These are players playing for mid-table teams in the Czech Republic. So I think there's got to be a level of understanding the opposition as well.
Sure. I scored Palmer 5 out of 10. So I think we're average the same so far, but a little bit less for me on Palmer. Very similar to you. I think that, yeah, there were a couple of good crosses and obviously a great assist for the Dykes goal. But as well as being partially to blame for the Czech Republic goal, he made some really bad kind of technical errors early on, like really kind of comical things where, you know, he kind of let the ball run out of play or made a kind of shocking pass. So I wasn't happy. I also felt that as well, although there were a couple of good crosses, there were opportunities at other times to get in balls a little bit earlier and stuff. So 5 out of 10 for him. Let's move on to the right-sided centre-back, Scott McTominay. Where have you got him, Gavin?
Scott McTominay got a 5 for me. He was played out of position, right? He's not a centre-back. I know there's been lots of debates on Twitter back and forth with regards to this. But I think for the opening goal, you just see it, his body shape, his positioning. And it wasn't just the goal that he struggled at, with those sort of movements. So I just felt that he was pretty poor. He gave away quite a few fouls as well. I don't think that he was particularly helped with a lack of a commanding presence in the team, you know, throughout the full team, to be honest. I felt that he maybe felt under a bit of pressure. And I think, you know, there's definitely an element of responsibility on Steve Clark for this one, but McTominay gets a 5 from me.
Okay, I scored McTominay 4 out of 10. I think it was really a night to forget for him. You know, he's not suited to the role, in my opinion. I'm not entirely sure what it is that's causing Clark to want to do that. But he was caught out positionally at times, you know, particularly for the goal. I also think that the things that you might want from a midfielder playing at centre-back, like, you know, being able to bring the ball out, you know, progression, good passing and stuff like that, it wasn't really there for him. 4 for me. What about just inside of him, Scott McKenna?
So I gave Scott McKenna, let me scroll down. Scott McKenna got a 5 for me as well. I didn't think he looked particularly comfortable. I thought he had quite a lot as well. Didn't really seem, you know, much of him stepping up with the ball. I feel at a higher level, McKenna's not particularly good. I feel like he's good in Scotland where, you know, when he's playing against, you know, teams like St Mirren and, you know, Kilmarnock, and not in a disrespectful way, but I just think his ceiling is definitely coming down a lot quicker for me. And I personally would have preferred Gallagher to play this game rather than McKenna, but yeah, 5 out of 10 for me for McKenna.
Okay, a 4 out of 10 for me for McKenna. This felt he was pretty lumbering throughout, passing wasn't great. He made a literal rugby tackle at one point, which was just ridiculous. He just, I don't know, he didn't really look in control of his body a lot of times. I'm a wee bit concerned that for once I seem to be scoring people a little bit more harshly than you or than anybody else. I don't know, have you ever seen like the scores that I think it's L'Equipe, the French newspaper, often do for like the French leagues, and they're just the harshest scorers ever. Like you could be Mbappe and get like a hat trick, and they give you like, you know, a kind of Gallic shrug and 7 out of 10. You know? So, anyway, let's move on. Liam Cooper, other centre back, what's your thoughts?
So Cooper gets a 6 for me. I thought he made a number of blocks and interceptions throughout the game that were quite important. I think only Andy Robertson had more passes in the game as well. I think there was quite a disparity between Cooper and the other two centre-backs. So for me, he at least showed that he wanted the ball and showed some of the qualities, albeit in a lacklustre structure. But he showed some positives, and I think that, you know, he should have played against Israel as well. But yeah, 6 out of 10 for Cooper for me.
Okay. It's a 4 for me as well for Cooper.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I kind of wanted him in both games, and I think I felt that the sort of skill set that I believe him to have would be a good thing to have. But I didn't really think that he added particularly good forward passing in this game. I didn't think it was quick enough. I didn't think he was moving the ball in quite the right areas. I also felt a little bit out of condition. I mean, it's been a very lengthy season in the Championship for him. I don't know how much pre-season he's had, but there were some times when like the ball was played in kind of behind him and McKenna on the left, and he didn't look too sharp, so he kind of concerned me at times.
Do you think, just quickly on that with Cooper, do you think this is where the systemic issues come in, because you've got players playing a completely different sort of formation and way that they're maybe used to, and it's not... I'm looking at the sort of back five in general, and I don't think any of them predominantly play in a back five. So do you think that's part of the issues for all these players?
Well, it can't help, right? You know, it's obviously a bit of a change for some or most of them. I don't think the Cooper's got the most of a different type of role to play in this team than others. You know, I mean, there's other people who are being asked to really be kind of you know, round pegs and square holes and stuff, but yeah, it can't help for any of them, I don't think. You know,
okay.
I didn't particularly understand the purpose in sticking with this formation versus the Czech Republic. I guess maybe Clark has decided, and I understand his thinking, I guess he's maybe decided that this is the formation to go to versus Israel, and he wants to give it another opportunity to kind of, you know, embed it and get people used to the system. But I did feel that if you're going to do that, I still don't know if McTominay is the right option. I don't really understand, like, if you're the purpose of having somebody that's like a defensive midfielder in that spot on the outside of the back three is so that he can be the guy that brings the ball forward, you know, and you do lots of ball progression that way. Or, you know, the purpose is to have somebody like Kieran Tierney in the, you know, the outside centre-back who's a full-back and is comfortable progressing the ball too. And it kind of, you know, the formation can switch a wee bit in terms of possession to out of possession. So I don't know. Yes, I agree with you that it must be confusing for the players, but I guess, you know, Clark's wanting to stick with it now for at least the next game. But I didn't necessarily think that he needed to stick with it for all the game against Israel, because the way it's designed to work wasn't really working. And B, I think that you probably would have wanted to move away from this for the Czech Republic game, in my view.
Yep.
Anyway, let's move forward, literally. Go to Andy Robertson at left wing back. What would you score him?
Robertson got a 6 for me. I can't wait for you to fire out a 2. But
I gave him a 6 as well. So go on, tell me why I was right to give him a 6.
So he's not a left wing back. I think there's a huge change in responsibilities going from a left back to a left wing back. Part of his game is, you know, overlapping, crossing from deep, and I just felt like the things that he is good at, we didn't particularly see. And I think that he tried to get on the ball. I think he had the most passes out of everyone on the team, and not that that's a measurement of how good you are, but it's at least someone trying to get on the ball and trying to be involved in things happening. But it just wasn't a good performance overall, right? But he got a 6 for me.
Okay. Yeah, maybe, you know, having a lot of passes is a sign that the ball's getting played to him too slowly, and then he's having to kind of check back and pass it back to somebody and then receive it again and stuff, you know. I think, yeah, so I gave him 6 out of 10. I think he managed to get forward a lot more than maybe in the Israel game. It was a bit of impetus to his game, made some runs, but I don't think the teammates found him early enough most of the time. You know, there wasn't quick out ball to him. There was a phase, though, right before we scored the Dykes goal, where we basically figured out that if we did have both of the wing backs high and wide, if we could find a way to switch it from one flank to the other, then one of the wing backs would be free, you know, basically with a bit of space. And that's how we got the goal, because it was Robertson who received the ball on the left and then came inside a wee bit and then managed to pass it to Palmer, who had loads of space to deliver it to Dykes. So, you know, but you know, once we kind of figured that out a wee bit, we didn't then really, you know, relentlessly try and, you know, exercise that option. But I think that did, that was a plus point for Robertson, that he kind of figured that out then. I mean, he's very used to that, you know, him and Alexander Arnold do it all the time. But he did deliberately look for Palmer, and he got the secondary shot assist, or whatever you would call it, for Dykes' goal, right? So anyway, better than Israel for Robertson, showed some impetus. Secondary shot assist for the first goal, won the penalty for the second goal, right? So, you know, good stuff there. What about the midfield? So let's start with John Fleck, who I did, there was a tweet the other day that said that basically if you asked a court reporter to draw a picture of the typical man from the west coast of Scotland, they would just draw John Fleck. And I think that's quite good. He's just kind of your average Lanarkshire man look to him. But aye, what would you score him for his footballing ability versus the Czech Republic?
I gave Fleck a 5, and I thought he just looked a bit lost throughout. Didn't feel like he particularly knew what he was supposed to do. Didn't feel he was as composed as, you know, we've maybe seen him for Sheffield United. He didn't particularly look like he was going to make anything happen, so maybe a 5 is a little bit generous, but yeah, I wasn't impressed with Fleck overall. What about you?
Gave him a 4, basically said what you said, so I've got here that he looked a bit lost. I'm not too sure that I am, or that he was sure on what he was actually bringing to the table, the sort of kind of things you might expect from Fleck. I remember seeing him live against Spurs. I think it was Pochettino's last game that I was at, and he was great, you know, just pure energy, but like energy with a purpose, you know, like not just kind of pointless aggression. It was like, here's somebody that just kind of wants to drive the ball, drive his team, and kind of, you know, an aggressive purpose to make things happen. And he just didn't seem to have an idea of what his kind of role or what his kind of goal was in this match, which is a shame. What about Kenny McLean then, Gavin?
So I gave McLean a 6 in this. It was a sloppy pass for the Czech goal, but there was a lot that happened after that, that was avoidable, but it was still a sloppy pass nonetheless. But I thought that there was a few occasions where he made some sort of nice dribbles from deeper areas, looked to try to break the lines. I think he wanted the ball a bit more than other players, and I felt like he was trying to make things happen, albeit it wasn't great, but he was at least trying, so he got a 6 from me.
Okay. Yeah, that what you're saying there is kind of making me pause and reflect on the score I've given, because I do remember, you're right, there was one particular moment where he did make a nice dribble in midfield. It actually showed a bit of purpose, I think, even beat two men. And then didn't it go kind of wide to Robertson? And it was nice kind of passing. We kind of got in behind them for once. So that was really good. That's what you'd want. But I thought other times his passing in general was absolutely fucking awful. Not just the one for the goal, but just there was loads of kind of short to medium distance passes where he was completely telegraphing things or executing things really badly and gave the ball away, you know, quite a few times and slowed things down. You know, there was times when I think there was one moment that kind of sticks in my mind where we were kind of breaking sort of through the middle from the right to the middle, and there was an on ball to Robertson, but and he could see the on ball, but instead of passing it directly to him, he kind of laid it off to Armstrong to get Armstrong to then pass it off to him, and it just frustrated me so much. So 3 out of 10 there, I've said it.
Wow.
I was really, really disappointed with him. I just thought, just in terms of technical ability, technical execution, and you know, making things happen.
I think that's harsh.
Okay, well, it's harsh. But
he's just scapegoat.
I wanted him in for God knows what reason when I thought it was going to be the actual, the Czech A team. I guess because I don't know, the Czech A team, the way the midfield plays, Derrida has a lot of license to kind of, you know, go all over the place, and I just thought it might be a role that McLean could. I remembered him doing something relatively functional and useful against Belgium, and I thought he could have done something like that. But yeah, he didn't really work for me in this, in terms of having responsibility to pass and stuff. Yeah. What about Stuart Armstrong?
5 for me for Armstrong. I felt like, and a question I have for you, but in overall terms, I felt like he was a bit just lackluster in ideas. Just felt like he didn't really have much of an impact on the game. Felt like he went hiding a little bit. For someone that has as much experience compared to the rest of this team, I just was pretty disappointed with his overall performance. And it got me sort of thinking, when was the last time that Stuart Armstrong had a good game for Scotland? I think he's got 20-odd caps, and I can't particularly remember one that stands out.
I don't know. Hard for me to think about an overall game. I do remember plenty of individual moments where Armstrong's done good things. I think this was a mixed game for him. I've given him 4 out of 10. I thought he didn't look particularly fit. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that he definitely had that sort of rusty element to it. But then I guess we'll come to this at the end. But this is where, to me, a lot of it comes down to the systemic stuff. But we'll probably get to that as an overarching point. Okay.
I guess maybe, like, I'm not sure, maybe systemic-wise, and you'll come on to it towards the end then, but that kind of midfield three, or I don't know if you would count Armstrong as part of that, is all a bit confusing to me as to what the kind of the roles were those midfielders, you know, if we're calling Armstrong one of those, and that's part of the point, right, of the problem. Anyway, for me, I thought, I'm not sure. Obviously, it's very difficult for the guys who are English Premier League players who have not started their season yet, and their season did end a lot later than the Scottish one. You know, what sort of pre-season have they had? You know, how are they doing, etc. But he didn't look very fit to me. I don't mean just match condition. You know, he didn't look particularly fit. I did think, though, at times that he did try and play with more purpose than some of the other guys. You know, he looked to get it forward. He looked to free the wing-backs. But again, the execution was off at times. There were some errors, some poor passes and so on. So yeah, 4 out of 10 for me for Armstrong. What about Ryan Christie?
Christie gets a 5 for me. Nearly gave him a 6, but I just felt that he's going to get a lot of credit for goals and assists recently, but his actual performance I thought was quite poor. I thought he was quite sloppy on the ball. Positionally, I wasn't overly impressed with him. I think
we don't count penalties when we're rating players, right?
Exactly.
Just get removed. Yeah. So sorry, go on. You were saying he was a wee bit.
Yeah, I just felt that he was a bit, again, similar to Armstrong, quite anonymous, but when he did have the ball, I just felt he was quite wasteful. And I think that's something we're also seeing with Celtic, and I hope it's not a trend for Christie, where, albeit yes, he's having lots of shots or lots of passes. Mm. But I just think there's something with his decision-making this season that's just not quite right, that I maybe didn't notice before.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I gave him a 5 out of 10. I felt that he was quite involved. There were some nice moments. It was like one moment on the kind of right side of the box where they actually got a wee bit of passing and kind of positional interplay going at his kind of insistence, which was lovely. But yeah, I agree, he was wasteful, almost to the point of being greedy at times, and maybe in a slightly different way than you might see him at Celtic. So it wasn't about him trying to take a shot necessarily, or getting a shot off from distance. This was like the moments where there was an opportunity, but he never, you know, played in the other guy or whatever, and then didn't even get a chance to get a shot off himself. You know, those kind of moments, which was really frustrating. And yeah, I think wasteful is a good word. And it's a wee bit concerning to see somebody play like that for your team, I think, where they're maybe it looks a wee bit selfish. It's not necessarily something, as much as you might think that Christie would want to get lots of shots off and kind of go for that, don't really have it in my mind as him being a kind of selfish player. So, yeah, a wee bit strange to see. What about Lyndon Dykes?
I'm going to give Dykes a 6. I felt he still had, I guess, like other players, sloppy moments, slack passes. But I still felt that he made some, you know, nice little link-up plays at times. There was a few moves I felt just outside the check box that he linked pretty well with. I thought he took his goal pretty well. I thought he looked like he had energy and done all the things that we would want him to do. So I was, I'm going to give him a 6.
Okay, a 5 for me out of 10. I think he did good to get the goal, right? Did really well for the goal. I think his movement for some of the other chances in the box could have been a wee bit better. There was one kind of stick in my mind where, I don't know, maybe it was Robertson getting in the left and Dykes was just kind of stuck a wee bit behind the centre-backs. And I was just, you could see like 5 seconds beforehand that you need to get to the front post here. And, you know, he just didn't do it. But overall, you know, he did fine. The goal was important. And I think he did his role okay. I feel that the hold-up touches and the link-up play wasn't quite there, really, even in comparison with the Israel game. So I think just, it was fine. And you know, part of the issue there is there's not enough people around him, not enough people to link up with. But, for example, like, do you remember the one in the Israel game where he was fouled on the halfway line, but he still managed to kind of get turned and get the pass off up the left line? I just thought that was such a brilliant piece of play, a really good example of what he can do to really draw players to him and then free somebody else. There was nothing like that in this game at all. You know, there wasn't any kind of those moments where you're like, well, that's a really good, that's what you'd want from that kind of guy. And I do completely appreciate that in times of dispiriting, depression, people need something to turn to that makes them feel good. And, you know, you and I have been long-term fans of Dykes and are very, very happy that he's in the squad now and delighted for him to get a goal. But I just think some of the comments after the game were like, you know, here's the centre forward, you know, that we've been crying out for now and so on. I would just want to be cautious about that. And I guess on that point, right, Gavin, just as a wee kind of, let's say, all the possible centre forwards that you could think might be available for Scotland are available, right? So let's say Griffiths, he's not back and necessarily starting for Celtic, right? But he's in the squad. He's, you know, fit. He's available. Let's say Shankland is playing. Let's say McBurney is not injured. Let's say Nisbet goes on and you know, still has a reasonable start to the season and whatever else happens. Where's Dykes in your ranking of selecting who to start if we're playing, you know, kind of a Scotland game?
So on the assumption that we're only playing one up top, right?
I guess, yeah.
I'm going to say that he's 1 or 2. And the reason for it, I know it's quite a big jump, but I think I said it before these games, I do think his skill set is suited to international football. I think he works hard. Okay. He's going to be aggressive. He's energetic. He can hold the ball up well. He's probably better than most of the other strikers at not having the ball, which I think, you know, if we were to play better opposition, where we can expect that to be the case. And I think you want players that are going to work hard, but not only work hard, but also be the sort of players that can disrupt the opposition defenders, whereas I don't think you get that with any of the rest of them.
Okay, fair enough, right? So you are firmly still on board the Lyndon Dykes hype train, as was everybody else on kind of Twitter after he got the goal. Fair enough. I guess the other thing I was going to ask as well is, right, so we've got the Euro 2020 qualifier on the 8th of October. Then we've got Slovakia home on the 11th of October, Czech Republic home 14th of October, Slovakia away the 15th of November, and Israel away on the 18th of November to kind of close out the Nations League group. I think, you know, regardless of the performances or circumstances or how we kind of feel about these two games, you know, that we've just had, 4 points this weekend and top of the group kind of gets Clark, like, I guess, pass marks generally. What about what happens next? Like, if, for instance, we lose the Euro 2020 qualifier semi-final to Israel, are you kind of thinking that perhaps it's time for Clark to go, or do you think he has to serve out the remainder of the Nations League campaign? What's your kind of view on this?
It's a tough one, right? So I think we had a brief discussion of this in our group chat, and I feel like, I think it was Andrew raised the point of, well, who do you get? And not that that should be a deterrent or a driver for a decision. If it's the wrong person, it's the wrong person. I think that we have a, right now, our core group of players are not set up to play in a Steve Clark manner and the way that Steve Clark likes to have his team set up. And I think we're seeing that in the performances. I think since he's taken over, there's not I'm not including the San Marino game because I don't think that should count, but I think all the rest of the games, there's nothing to really, really suggest that we are making progress. And yes, we'll be picking up points in terms of the FIFA rankings, etc., with these wins, but I don't see, as soon as we face a top level opposition, I think we'll struggle. And I think we would have struggled against the Czech Republic had they actually had their A team available. And for me, yeah, I think that there's always got to be a point, right, where you have to say, what was the objectives? Did the manager or coach meet those objectives? And if they didn't, are you willing to wait for them to get it right? I think we've got a number of players who, you know, I don't think we can afford to wait 4 years is what I'm sort of getting at. I think a number of these players will, you know, start to be on the decline by the time it comes to the next major tournament. And I worry about the 21s that we have available. So, yeah, I'm going to say that I don't know the answer, but I'm definitely feeling nervous about Steve Clark just now.
Okay. I guess the thing for me again is obviously I'm supportive of Steve Clark. I do think there's still matches there, but, you know, not being particularly happy with the performances. The worry for me is that the same pattern as we've seen in the past repeats itself, where maybe we go on and have a reasonable enough end to this Nations League campaign. That means that, you know, he stays in position and, you know, everybody's kind of fine. And then in the next cycle, we start with the kind of culmination of this, where the bad performances that we've seen now continue, but we get bad results as well. And then, you know, the SFA decide to dismiss him already partway into the next campaign. And then you bring somebody in who's got, you know, that bad start already and they've got no chance. And then they can't turn it around. And then, you know, the same thing just keeps repeating itself. I kind of feel like we keep going into these things in that way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think you're right. This is definitely where I feel like we need to be more cohesive from top to bottom, and I don't get that vibe just now. And I guess we can sort of move on to that when we get to the 21s. But yeah, definitely alarm bells are ringing right now for me. But I think it's alarm bells, not just about appointment, but it's about strategy. It's about the future. There's questions for me, and I'm just not sure what the answers are right now.
Okay, fair enough. We'll come back to that, I guess. You want to talk about the Scotland under-21s now?
I guess we've already, you know, depressed the listeners by going through this, so we may as well keep it going.
Okay. In some ways it wasn't too depressing today, given that they had a win. So I watched Scotland beat Lithuania 1-0 in Lithuania. I guess to give a kind of brief overview of it, so we played a 4-2-3-1 formation with Ross Doohan in goals, Ross McCrory at right back, Ryan Porteous and George Johnston at centre back, Daniel Harvey at left back, Alan Campbell and Lewis Ferguson in central midfield, Glenn Middleton at left wing, Nathan Patterson playing right wing, David Turnbull at kind of the central attacking midfield position, and Fraser Hornby at centre forward. So that's a, you know, a pretty experienced team. I think on paper, you know, particularly maybe with the people who are in the midfield, or, you know, when we've seen the team sheet, we maybe thought that McCrory would be in midfield as well. I think most people would say, you know, it's got some impressive people in it probably. In terms of the match, well, as I said, we got a 1-0 win, and that puts us third in our qualifying group out of six teams. We're 2 points behind Greece, who are in second with four games left. However, this wasn't really a good performance. It was not a good game to watch, really. I watched it after work today, and we started off by looking a bit shaky at the back. Some individual errors, I think, from both centre-backs, really. Nothing entirely disastrous, but just kind of like, you know, sort of the type of clearance where you kind of sclaff it a bit or don't really kind of think about the next step beyond, you know, where you're kind of putting your block in. And again, the other things that stuck out were we weren't great for the umpteenth time at progressing the ball through the middle of the park. Not a lot of kind of positional rotation or passing and movement, you know. Lots of us just getting out to the winger, but very little kind of quality delivery. Glenn Middleton especially had a particularly poor game, I would say. You know, the right back wasn't very good. You know, he was playing left wing and the right back was not good. You know, there were opportunities to go past him, but either Middleton didn't really have the kind of the high grade acceleration or the kind of trick to get past him and get actually separated from him and then couldn't really get in the ball. Or if he did get in a delivery, it was poor, wasteful. Patterson did okay at right wing, but he's not a winger. The kind of, you know, in the first half, he was very, very unable to get in any sort of crosses that were decent. And that's because Patterson's quite good technically, but because he's not used to having to do that, he maybe wasn't thinking a step ahead. Like, he'd maybe work out how to beat the guy, but the way he was beating the guy was then not giving him the opportunity to actually get across. Like, he would beat the guy with some sort of kind of chop back skill, but then he's on his left foot and not in a good space for delivering it, if that makes sense. But he did okay, given what he was asked to do. And David Turnbull was really not able to get into the game at all much. Again, you know, as I said, Scotland were not good at kind of passing it through the middle or getting people kind of into the game. And it was all just a bit depressing, really. We ended up scoring when Patterson did manage to get in a really good cross quite late on, and it kind of fell after a kind of clearance header to Campbell on the edge of the area, who managed to kind of hit a kind of strange shot that the goalkeeper was kind of out of position for. But overall, it was a pretty even game with not a lot of quality, lots and lots of fouls, and not many clear chances created by Scotland. I guess the thing that jumped out to me, and this is maybe a bit of a random question, Gavin, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Well, I don't know if it's necessarily a question for you or for a Scotland manager, but what I was thinking was what I would actually like to ask a Scotland manager, whether it's Scott Gemmell at the 21s or if it's Dee Park, is for them to imagine that they're thinking about the match. So let's say they're in bed the night before the game and they're dreaming about the match. They're visualising it in a realistic way. Like, they're not kind of thinking, oh, you know, we're going to win 5-0 or whatever. You know, actually kind of picture it in their mind. I would wonder what they would say if you asked them, how do we score? What's our goal like? You know, I don't really know. I don't get the feeling when I watch these games that the manager has an idea of how we're going to score. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's
something that you should think about, right? And I know that's for, you know, maybe in football people would want there not to be kind of, I don't know, these kind of automated passages of play, you know, where like Antonio Conte says, if you go here, then you go here and blah, blah, blah. You know, maybe, you know, the manager might want, you know, particularly at youth level, under 21s or whatever, to leave it up to the players in some way, they might say, or something. But, and, you know, hope for kind of individual moments of brilliance and things, but I don't think that's necessarily realistic. And also, maybe I don't know how that makes the players feel, particularly if maybe they're used to having more of a plan. And again, you know, I don't know what's going on. Maybe there are specific plans for the 21s and so on in terms of how they're going to score. I just don't see it. It's a question I would like to ask. You know, how are you going to score a goal in this match? You know,
I think Scott Gemmell has. I don't know how to say this without it sounding too bad, but I just don't feel like any of our 21s are really progressing under him. I don't get his setup. I don't get what his plan is. I do feel very similar to you. I do feel like when you watch them, it's like they're waiting for a set piece, or they're waiting for just the ball to break to the right person at the right moment, rather than actually having a pattern of play or a tactic or a setup to expose the opposition. It just feels very basic.
I think that maybe that I wouldn't place all of that at the manager's feet. I think with this group, maybe it's probably just time for some of them to phase out. And unfortunately, just maybe with the way that they've been managed, maybe there's been a tendency to kind of reward people who've been available. And there's a positive, obviously, to keeping the same group together and having people get lots of caps together. But it's not necessarily a great sign if it's just happening through some form of kind of, you know, sentimentality, or people aren't then looking like they're going to graduate to the seniors despite having played for the under-21s a lot. So I guess all I'm meaning is that the end of this cycle might be a good thing, you know, for some of the players at that level who are not necessarily going to be going beyond it to Scottish international football, and maybe for us to be a little bit more aggressive about bumping people up a level or two that deserve it. And obviously you need to be careful, you know, you want to have a group coming together, but it doesn't necessarily need to be a group who are all, you know, the exact same age, and so on. It might be time to, you know, have people who are in the squad today, like Nathan Patterson, like Lewis Fiorini, maybe Aaron Hickey, and so on, you know, bumped up and all, you know, growing together at the 21s, and then some of the people who have been in the 21s for a long time, maybe it's time for them to go.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. A pretty fair analogy, and I guess it's not the most, fanfare type podcast tonight, but these are the harsh realities of where we are as a nation, right? So,
And even the team selection was kind of making me think that too, because like I said, Ross McCrory played at right back, and you know, you might say, well, maybe Patterson was played at right wing because there's a dearth of right wingers, which might be true, but you know, I think it would be always beneficial to start somebody whose position is actually. But what I was thinking is maybe the reason they did that is that they really wanted Patterson in the team, but they also want McCrory, who is captain, in the team. And they want Ferguson and Campbell, who are kind of stalwarts of this team, in the midfield, and Turnbull as well. But if you have all those guys, you can't get McCrory in the midfield as well. So this is a way to kind of accommodate the guys who are, like, you know, McCrory and Ferguson and Campbell are the kind of main guys for this group, you know, of under-21s. That's a way to maybe get them all in. But, you know, I don't know. Not too sure what I'm saying there, but I just think what I mean maybe is that there's maybe some accommodation of people, rather than thinking of, you know, what's the system, the team that's going to win this. There were quite a few performances tonight that, in my view, were really quite bad. I don't want to be too critical because obviously it's under 21 football. It's difficult, you know. It was a bad pitch. They're not together for that long, you know, and you know it's a lot to ask. And these are guys, a lot of them who are playing a lot of senior minutes for their club and stuff, so you know they've had a tough start to the season. But you know, for instance, people will see the fact that Campbell scored and you know praise that, but he and Ferguson were very bad in my view in the midfield. They got bypassed a hell of a lot, got pulled out of position. There was a moment where one guy, the Lithuanian right winger, nutmegged Daniel Harvey and then Alan Campbell, one after another, like in a row, like some sort of drafts move. It was just, so I don't know. This game was the kind of icing on the cake of a tough weekend where we couldn't even get an Iceland result against England. And no doubt, I've not checked the score, but despite the fact that England are playing about 7 centre-backs, probably they're going to win against Denmark tonight as well, right?
Yeah. Let me just quickly put you on the spot. Finally, on the 21s, out of the players that played tonight, how many of them do you think, putting your sort of Mystic Meg hat on, will actually make it to the senior squad?
Oh, that's a good question, right? So, do I need to give a definite exact number?
No, just players that you think have got the best opportunity.
Okay, right, let's think. So, of the players that started tonight, I'm going to say that there's maybe four who will definitely get a cap. So, Ryan Porteous, Nathan Patterson, Fraser Hornby, and David Turnbull, I think are all locked to get at least one cap. I think that Alan Campbell will definitely get one because of maybe the type of player he is, how many under 21 caps he's got, and the fact that he's usually available. Lewis Ferguson and Ryan McCrory are pretty likely as well, right? Just McCrory because of his sort of versatility, and Ferguson, you know, pretty versatile as well, and they'll be available. So that's seven, right? I would say all seven of those definitely get a cap. Mm-hmm. But I don't think any of them will get more than 10 caps, right? Yeah. So I think seven of the starters will get a cap. I will say three of them will get more than 10 caps.
Okay.
So we'll meet back here in I don't know, a decade.
Yeah.
See, anything else you want to ask about the under-21s, or is that kind of us in terms of about Scotland tonight?
Yeah, I feel like we've exhausted the pressing train that is the Scottish national team as far as it can go tonight.
Okay, fair enough. Well, thanks to everybody as ever for listening to the Pure Football podcast. We've actually had a lot of articles up on the website recently and have a lot to come this week as well. There's an article up today about Ross County's start to the season. So check that out. And I think, Gavin, you've got one going up about managerial power rankings where, again, you're going to be scoring people and kind of ranking them and you know, saying who's having a good or bad start to the season. And an article about Hamilton Accies, I think, as well is to come. Yeah, great. Yep. So that's all exciting stuff to have a look for on the website, which, of course, is purefootball.com this week. Anything you want to leave the listeners with, Gavin?
We promise that it's not always as dour as this. We're just replicating Steve Clark's body language.
Absolutely. Scottish Premiership stuff to come at a weekend. Maybe, I don't know, we'll have a look at the start of the English Premier League soon and so on. It will be exciting. There will be good football to watch and good things to say about it. So looking forward to that. Thanks then. Bye-bye, everyone.